Well, I'm here to talk about something which doesn't have to do really with machine translation as such. And basically, I suppose Hans picked me because for 14 years I've been running a successful language technology company in Europe. And basically, that company was never supposed to start, and I was never supposed to do what I'm doing, but anyway, I am. So I'm going to tell you things from the perspective of the difficulties and the, shall we say, also a bit of the potential that we have. I will, to start with, at least focus a bit on the difficulties. Normally, when we start a company, we come from an economic, from an academic environment. The software is far from ready for being anything useful. It's actually a little prototype. And due to those limited situations, we really are not ready for the market. Then, of course, that person who is sort of feeling brave enough to start a company doesn't really have a clue what he's doing, or he. And this is a scenario which everybody in venture adores because they would like to eat you alive. As sharks they are, they will continue. So we need a bit of money to get to the marketing stage. The seed financing usually comes with a lot of conditions. And the normal scenario is that you get rid of the innovators at this stage because actually they're useless for business. So you're out there. And this has happened to many people in the field. There is a situation which actually makes the academic scenario somewhat of a short-lived success going into business and out again, back into academia, feeling a bit failed and a bit disillusioned. And it doesn't really need to be this way. The first steps should always be, what is it that I don't know? It really is so important. You don't know anything about the external world of commercial business when you go out there. You don't know what people want from you. You don't know what they are actually out to get. And they will never tell you because it's their principle not to help, to tell you. And everybody wants to help you. Everybody. If you pay them. And are they useful? I would say in 99% of the situation, no, they're not. So, what is the pot of gold? The translation engine, the whatever you have developed, it doesn't matter what it is. It is a piece of shit, most of the time. I'm sorry to say so, but actually most of the time, you learn more from making your first product by the mistakes that you make than actually building a commercial success. But this is key, because if you are able to get yourself to the stage where you're able to reproduce the software that you built originally, you're able to make a successful start, at least software-wise. There is, however, a very, very big bottleneck that we have to be aware of in our field, and it is that we are breaking ground. No matter what we're doing, we're breaking ground. Just to give you an example, just the last half a year or a bit more, I have been developing something which is called a cleanup software for translation memories and terminology. Do you know how hard that is? It's basically a mission impossible. I refused to sell it to my client before I finished because I really didn't believe I could do it. And frankly, this is the case with most of the things we're doing. And we have to be very careful regarding the market, what it is, who it is that we're selling to. We cannot say that everybody is our client. It isn't. There has to be a pinpointed client to begin with that you feel secure in order to address that person. You can convince that person or that company, like the Volkswagen scenario, where you have a person inside the operation that is willing to push and believes in what you're doing. This is so crucial, because without this, you don't have a first client. The sad thing is that when we talk about about the market, we usually talk about something fictive that is sort of not really there. The translation market may be billions and billions of euro, but the translation software market is nothing like that. Even in the heydays of the top level of Trados, They could never break the 30 million barrier, no matter how they tried, no matter how many software companies they bought to put into their operation. They never broke the $30 million barrier. Now, why is this? Well, the translation software market is not more than 100 million globally in the world today. It's actually less, but just to be sort of nice, we put it up a bit. And the fact of the matter is, it should be much bigger because there are much more users than there are buyers. And the reason for there being much more users than there are buyers is that our very, very complex technology is provided for free to many people. So we face actually a competition with companies that provide things for free in the translation software business, at least. But I'm actually quite an optimist, and I actually didn't start out that way, at least about 2 years ago, when I decided to stop all my development on translation software, when I saw Google going for free. I have to tell you, there is a way forward. And I just signed, actually, last year I signed a contract for Turkish, which I didn't expect to get, and another one just a few weeks ago for Russia. So no matter what happens with Google, things move forward. Now, the client communication process is probably the toughest there is. You promise too much, and you sign it, you're dead. You may actually totally lose your company. The demands, measurable improvements, difficult in language. How do you quantify rules? How do you quantify language in general? Well, Trados had a very simplistic, kind of simple scenario, having the valuation of a sentence being 100% match and a variation of that lower. This was their commercial breakthrough. Without that, they would never have been able to sell the software, except probably to the commission, sorry. Then there is the legal and economic responsibility. As academics, you don't stand a chance. They don't want you. You have no responsibility towards them. They don't want to work with you, really. They want to work with companies, because they want you to be legally and economically responsible for the task you are going to do for them. And this is crucial. And this was the first thing that the Thomson Corporation or Thomson Reuters said to me when I was started with them as an academic in 95. Gudrun, if you don't have a company, we will not sign a contract with you. And if you have a company, you will have to take full responsibility for what you're doing. And okay, I did. Luckily, I survived. Now, deadlines are always secured with penalties that you can't afford. Now, you either sign those or you're out. You can never really negotiate them down. You just have to work your butt off to make them. You also have to be prepared never to sleep. There is a 24-hour support and a flawless operation as a condition. And then you face different technical requirements than you do from academia. Nobody in the industry today wants open source. This is not an issue. Basically because it carries legal and very important implications that companies have basically put into their contracts saying, if you have open source, we will not accept it in our solutions. All the technical requirements are, of course, different operational systems and so forth. But the biggest news that I have, actually, is that now I have to sign contracts where I promise that there is no open source inside. Now, did I go far? No. Well, this is the thing. Do you or don't you expand? You are a 2 or 3 person operation, and you're doing quite well. Well, there is this thing that companies like to be big. But isn't that a bit of a cliché? Actually, your power is in being able to reproduce software. And if you can do that with fewer people, then you can with more people, you actually make a better profit. And it is less costly to keep these few people and probably more plausible that you keep them in the long term because you can pay them hilarious wages. Now, size has been used by a venture capital for a very long time to break you. And I've watched company after company go under because of this. I have also watched big ones go bust because of venture going in and insisting on extreme additions. It is something that I believe they use as a tool. I'm probably being sort of, well, you know, neurotic about it, but they really are aiming to break you. Actually, they are not, they're aiming to build or break you. Either you completely succeed with very short time, a year, or you fall flat on your face. My advice to all of you is to move slow and careful and build well and support your people. Now, here's the bad one. You're no longer an academic, and you have to admit it. You have to focus on your business, and you can't stay in touch with what is happening in your R&D. I am so lucky that I have friends, and I actually am able to communicate with them every now and again, but a little part of my time goes to see what is happening in my field. I am outdated completely, but I am aware of it, and if I wasn't, I wouldn't be able to stay in business. This is key and essential for the future of SMEs in our field. Because without knowing what we are to evolve towards, we cannot really stay on the same solutions forever. Well, this is also a hard one. You're no longer a famous academic that has done excellent research and you have all your papers published everywhere. You're an idiot, which actually is being sold for money. And you have to accept the fact that you are what you produce. And it's not so bad. You can be quite happy with it. But important is that you do not build a false image. No bubbles. Because nobody will believe in what you do anyway if you claim that you do everything and it's bound to fail. You have to be able to actually stand up to what you're doing. Well, now we talk research and language technology SMEs. The communication between those two, not working well. Often R&D tends to see us, their small SMEs, as a bit of a competition. And sometimes the reverse. You are a bit of a competition to us. But I'm afraid we're not many enough to keep this fight going. We need to be able to collaborate very intensively. We have an opportunity now because finally the Commission is supporting R&D in our field. And finally we're able to maybe take a bit bolder step towards SMEs on a more larger scale inside Europe, building small centers where we communicate and things like that. So we need each other. We do need it on the commercial side. We need new software and we need new improvements in our existing softwares. And the R&D community needs idiots like me that is able to think as a lawyer, as an economic, as anything that needs to be done as in business. So advice needs to go both ways. Academics, they do tend to think that business is far too simple and you need to be everything in order to be able to be successful. And there's some point I would like to make because I'm a female chauvinist pig. There is actually a tendency in our field that women are the most successful business operators. There are two of us here today. There's a third missing. But we all come from the academic scenario. Adriana is over there, I'm here, and there are a few more, but basically, you men need to prove a point. And that's my final word, I always make things short. Any questions? So, this is my advice. Support contractual communication and business strategy, support marketing, and support innovation by giving R&D expertise advice, and collaborate.